Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm Delshree Gladden. I'm an author of over 30 published novels and a ninth grade English teacher this year. And on this week's episode, I have a return guest. Miriam Sagan was my first interviewee when I took over the show, and she is back to talk about two of her most recent books of poetry. Miriam, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, thank you for having me back. This is Miriam. I'm talking to you from Santa Fe, New Mexico. We had our big freeze last night, and so I think officially no more gardening, and winter is upon us.
We've been getting really cold up here in Farmington as well. It's kind of nice. I'm ready for it, but kind of end of the plants. My garden looks terrible at this point.
I'm just not going to look for, you know, maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
Then I'll look again.
My dog's murdered half of my plants, and I just was kind of like, maybe I should just move to succulents next year.
There is always that. Minimalism, yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, let's jump in. So the two new books that I got the opportunity to read were Castaway and Borderline. So give us an idea of what these two are. One, I was really excited to see was haiku, because you just don't find very many people who write haiku.
Haiku is being written actually all over the world and in different languages, but you sort of have to, you know, be tracking that extended community. Haiku, of course, started in Japan, and kind of the way, like, you know, food goes from culture to culture, and sort of like the pizza of New York is not the pizza of Naples. Haiku has that same sort of tasty effect on people, and it's the kind that I'm writing. I call them Santa Fe haiku or American haiku, English language, but they do draw a lot from the tradition of haiku, which is brevity and contrast and also certain emotional things. In the traditional Japanese, loneliness and poverty are considered to be important, and I would translate those as solitude and non-materialism. I mean, they're a lot about the passing moment. So these are 100, and are they 101? Aha, they are 101. At first I thought they were going to be 100, and then I wrote one more. I was working with an editor who I love, Rich Seuss, who's the editor of a beautiful magazine and press in Joshua Tree. And I think I said, I'm going to send you 100. And then it had 101 is no big deal. So they were written over a fairly long amount of time, a lot of new ones that I kind of wrote to create the backbone of the book. But then there were some that were drawn from several years ago.
Well, and I liked what you said about it being moments and having emotion. That was one of the things that struck me going through this the most, was that there's so much that you can put into so few words.
Yes, it's because it's about focus, which is a fabulous substitute for elbow grease in many ways, right? Just that flash is really gratifying.
I wanted to ask you about the process of writing haiku, and I was really glad to see this. It's probably been a month or so now. I interviewed Faulkner, his book, The Art of Brevity, and he does a lot of 100-word stories and really short flash fiction type things. And I found that discussion so interesting because that is not my skill at all. I struggle to keep things concise. But it was really neat to have talked about that with him and then to read yours. And I felt like that better prepared me to kind of take on reading haiku and seeing how much you can bring to it and the pictures that you could paint in just really a small handful of words.
No, exactly. I mean, you're more of a novelist and you have to build that whole psychological world. While really, haiku is a lot like when you're driving along with a friend or a family member, you go, look at the ducks, or is that an elk? I mean, or Is that somebody dressed up with balloons? Just those momentary things that are flashing by us. And really, you're just telling the reader, look, look, I think, trying to draw the reader into your moment of perception.
Absolutely. I felt like I had that quite a bit reading these, where it was like, yeah, I have had that moment before, or it made me stop and think of the visual. One of the ones that really got me, like, right at the beginning was the one, a pile of stones, black teacups mended with gold epoxy. And
yeah,
I loved that. And I instantly just kind of had to stop. And I had this visual image. I can't think of the name of it. I should have looked it up. But the tradition of repairing broken items with gold so that you're putting it back together, but you're actually making it more valuable for the fact that it was broken at some point, and just that life lesson that you could take away from it. You can come back and you can learn and you can really grow from that. And like I said, it was just so few words, but it really made me stop. And I had to even set the book down for a minute and just kind of think about that again.
That's really cool. I mean, in a way, you know, the haiku kind of makes the reader do a little bit of work, because in a longer poem, you might say that black teacups are mended with gold epoxy. And then you might say, as they do in Japan, and then you might add, you know, it's like my feelings or my broken heart. But here with the haiku, there's a lot of trust that the reader is in the same world, right? That we're all in the same world, that the reader can get it and doesn't need to be led along that strictly. So there's a little jump between the writer's perception and the reader's understanding. I think it's very intimate.
It is. There is that level of trust there. And I love the way you put that. There were a lot where I was reading through and somewhere I instantly recognized having had that same moment or connecting it with something. And then others that I did have to take a minute and think about and read it several times and make those connections that maybe it wasn't something I was super familiar with. But when I took a moment to stop and sit with it, then it was like, okay, I get what you're saying.
No, I have that definitely when I read haiku, classic haiku. And actually, sometimes I understand something better years later, like that I sort of got it, and then I got it more. They're kind of packaged poetic energy, and that's a lot of what makes them fun to read and to write.
I hope that this inspires people to try it more. Like you were saying, you're more connected with that community of seeing where it's being written and who's involved in it, and I haven't had that opportunity to meet very many people who write haiku. I think it's a really neat thing that more people are involved in it than I realize, because I find it just such an interesting challenge to, like you said, focus on those individual moments and that concept of you're present, you're observing, you're seeing, you're feeling something in that moment. And I think that's something most of us always need a little bit more practice. We're rushing so much, yeah. We're flying through our day, and then it's like, oh, wait. What was that?
No, exactly. I mean, sometimes I'll go out in the backyard and I'll come back in and tell my husband, it's a haiku a minute out there. You know, it'll be like the last grasshopper of the season, the first snowflake of the season, just what we were talking about at the beginning. Something's blooming that shouldn't be blooming, and the neighbors are blasting, you know, oldies on the boombox, and it's just things are coming together. But it's not always possible for me to be in that heightened state of observation. So it's good to have a reason to try to get into it.
Yeah, I like the idea of setting aside, you know, even like 5 minutes of your day to just be observant of what's going on around you and take note of those moments that you would normally just be completely unaware of or brush off or, you know, just move on past without thinking about it too much. What an interesting meditation almost to try.
Well, I'll tell you something funny. You know, haiku is usually written, you know, in beautiful surroundings. But I have a friend, Steffi, and she and I go to the DeVargas Mall, and we write haiku maybe once every 6 or 7 weeks. We just get ourselves something hot to drink, and there's a concept called the passing scene in haiku, where basically you're just watching the world, and, you know, the shopping mall has got, once you settle down, and look, it has amazing things happening. Everything from people playing backgammon, right, to real flowers, to false flowers, to screaming toddlers and little dogs, and it's been really fun. We go when the weather's bad, but it's just been really fun to turn something that's super mundane into something that has, you know, haiku dynamism.
like that. It reminds me of, you know, taking art classes and having assignments to, you know, sit out somewhere in the public and do quick sketches of the movement that's going on around you. Like, the purpose isn't to create anything good, really. It's just to capture movement. Yep. And see what's going on around you. And I like that connection of being able to do the same thing with words. I think for me especially, like, that's a skill that I don't exercise very often. And I think that would be really fun to try and just find those moments that can inspire something.
Yeah. It's a lot like what you described with the sketching. I mean, it's very analogous.
Well, and one of the other things that really, I guess, caught me while going through some of these is how many of these little moments that you capture are really profound. And if you don't take the time to stop and recognize them, like, you really miss something. And one of those that I had marked that was one that really, again, kind of made me stop for a minute was about almost about halfway through. And it was, I throw out my dead husband's sunglasses now that I'm also ill. And that was one that just really struck me because it could be, you know, just something in passing that's like, oh, why are these still here? But stopping and thinking, why am I paying attention to that now? Why did it suddenly catch my notice and now I want to do something with this item? And it's just an interesting moment to stop and take notice of, to think about a little bit more. And how many of those moments do we have every day, all day long? And we just, you know, let them go by a lot of the time.
No, exactly. You really touch on one that, you know, was pretty poignant for me because, you know, my first husband is very long deceased. It's almost 30 years. And I had his sunglasses, you know, and I didn't really want anybody else to find them or know about it, right? Because what was I holding on to? And in a way, sort of the hike was kind of a confession, right? I did throw out the sunglasses, and then I kind of memorialized them in the haiku, which then I'm sharing, right, with you and everybody else. So it was very satisfying, like letting go, holding on, and as you say, mostly acknowledging.
I love that. I think this was such an interesting book for me. Life has been just like super crazy lately. I started teaching this year, so I, you know, spend all my free time lesson planning and grading stuff. And we have a mentor program here in this area with the school district. And my mentor keeps telling me, take some time for yourself. Just step away from everything. Make sure you're doing what you need to do to make sure you're okay. And this was something that really kind of reinforced that idea for me of I am just constantly rushing through my day most of the time and all over the place. And even the cover was part of that for me, where it was just this really wonderful reminder of slowing down a little bit. It's just a few syllables if you're, you know, when you're looking at trying to put your thoughts together, but being able to stop and slow down and notice and acknowledge and reflect. That was something that I was like, man, I have not been paying attention to a lot of the little small moments. And I did want to ask you about the art on the cover for our listeners who maybe can't see it. It's this really lovely picture of these two boots by themselves, and they're just on what looks like a kind of a concrete area. And what was the significance of that, and where did that image come from and tie in for you with this book?
Okay, how fun that you noticed. And I just want to acknowledge that how exhausting teaching is. So, you know,
definitely,
it's really tiring. This is a photograph that my daughter Isabel Winton Sagan took. You know, she's a professional visual artist. It's her daughter, my granddaughter's boots. You can't really tell that they're like a toddler's boots from the cover. Because they were shot very low, and they've got a turquoise lining. And it was just, I think, for my daughter Isabel, one of those moments, not unlike a haiku, you know, where you see the boots without the person. You know the child is going to grow up. But in terms of it being on the cover, a lot of the haiku in the book are about, as the title suggests, borderlines, including, you know, the geopolitical border between the American Southwest and Mexico. Life and death, between happiness and sorrow, all of those in-between zones. So when I looked at it, I thought, you know, were these left behind? Did somebody step in a river? Were they going to come back? Did they want to? Were they inherited from somebody? But, of course, the fact that they're a little girl's boots, I think, underlies the emotional tonality of the cover, because we outgrow our boots, and yet we really, really need them to get anywhere. So I would say it's a kind of photograph haiku on that level.
Absolutely. I love knowing the history of that. It was an image that really struck me, and I'm glad that that had some personal significance and connection as well. That's really neat.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't want to not save enough time for Castaway. So before I get too much more caught up in in Borderline, I did have some questions and some just topics for chatting about Castaway. So tell everybody a little bit about this book of poetry.
This book of poetry came out in June. It's from one of my venerable Southwestern publishers, Red Mountain Press. They've been very supportive of me, and I guess this might be my fifth book with them. The heart of the book for me is a cycle of narrative poems, storytelling poems, called The Librarian at Sea Level. And that is my ecological poem about global warming. It's also about a lot of other things. I had this image of a librarian in a branch library. I mean, married to two and many friends. And this librarian, she will not leave the library. The ocean is rising, but she's like the captain who goes down with the ship. And I set it in San Francisco, where I used to live, so that I've got those 45 avenues and streets that the ocean can cross. I gave her her backstory, and I really, I think you'll relate to this, I really tried to write it as a short story or a novella, and I just didn't have enough plot. It was very heavy on the image of a person alone and the water rising, and finally I thought, well, you know, poetry can be narrative. So I read some of the romantics, and I read some more contemporary work, and I decided to tell the story, you know, through, essentially, through lyric-free verse, and a lot of other things happen in the poem, which I can always talk about a little bit more, but she doesn't leave. She's, I mean, in a way, she's both a librarian and a library. The other poems in the book are a lot about having been quite ill and a kind of confrontation or relationship with mortality and aging and the passage of time. And interestingly, they were not all written out of that. Some of them were just written as, you know, landscape and just kind of thoughts about the neighborhood or about life. And some of them are really oriented towards thinking about death and connecting to it. But when people read the book, they tend to think that it's all the same. It's kind of delightful that the librarian and me, and it has more, it's more holistic than I realized when I first put it together. So there's personal poems, and then there's these narrative poems, which are you know, are a persona, because I am not a librarian in a sinking library. But in a way, we're all librarians in a sinking library. So I think that's kind of what the book puts forward. And, you know, the title is about being cast away, right, on a desert island, as, you know, the fairy tales of my childhood went. Then what will happen? What will you do? So that's kind of my overview. I hope that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. I did notice the interesting combinations, whereas with, you know, Borderline, it's all haiku. This, we had a variety of some pretty short poems, and then some like the librarian at sea level, where it's a good handful, what, like 10 or so of the book pages. And yep. It's in parts. And so you see the progression of the story over the different parts of the poem. But there was really kind of an overarching idea, even though it was interesting starting out, because you have some where it's description of specific places and smaller moments that you're talking about. And I noticed at the back of the book where you said where some of these had been in other areas in your different experiences as they were written. But you really do come back to these themes of transitioning and moving through life and kind of figuring out what some of those next steps are.
Mm-hmm.
But you do that in a variety of ways that was really interesting, because I did feel like I was getting a wide variety of topics and styles, but I still kept kind of circling back to those same ideas.
I think it has, it's emotionally connected, which, you know, I've been having a very odd and interesting experience. I need to complete sending some work to an archive. I'm archived with Southwestern Women in San Marcos in Texas, and there's been these file folders I haven't been able to let go of, and they're basically uncollected work. And when I've been looking at them and selecting them, and some of them aren't even on the computer, you know, when I look at them, all my themes are still there, even if it's like written by a kind of dorky 22-year-old. You know, the passage of time, the ancient world, the things that lie underneath, like the unconscious mind, or like archaeology, kind of how the self expresses itself in the world, the ocean, the desert, the ocean. I mean, it's pretty great. I guess it's sort of like what it means to have a personality, or themes would be the more literary way to put it.
I noticed that even from reading your books last year, you're often looking at the journeys that you go through in life,
yes.
Whether that's some of your themes from earlier were moving from childhood to adulthood and some of those changes. And in this one, in Castaway, as you mentioned on the back of the book, the opposing worlds and kind of transitioning between those and seeing both sides of something, uh-huh. And then really kind of drawing a better understanding of where you know, you as the reader or the character in the poem, you know, where they're at in the present and seeing what came before, what comes ahead, and getting that sense of it's not static. It's always in the middle of something moving from one direction to another. And one of the ones that I really enjoyed that showed that was "For Months I Seemed Ordinary." And I wanted to ask you about that one a little bit more and some of the, I guess, just meaning behind it and your experience writing that one.
I would be glad to. Basically, I think it's about inner and outer. It's exactly what you were describing there. And kind of how do we appear to ourselves, you know, and to others. So, I mean, I was dealing with a difficult health situation, and I don't know if you've ever had this, but in times of crisis, sometimes I'll look in the mirror and I'll be shocked that I still look the same. I mean, that it's not expressed. And so there's this little bit towards the end of the poem that says, I'd like to say I'm going away forever, which of course would be, you know, about dying or dissolving into the unknown. But even with that, perhaps we'll meet again. Perhaps we won't, right? Because these things are essentially, you know, the essence of mystery. And that's really, I think, what the poem was coming out of as its context. And there's a lot of images scattered throughout. I think those images are an attempt to kind of build up the feeling. I've got coffee cups and a dish drainer and ashtrays, and then I've got the rings of Saturn. So you can see it jumps more than a haiku would jump between the completely mundane, right, and the completely cosmic or universal.
Well, and I thought it was interesting, especially that you bring that up. You mentioned the rings of Saturn, and just in comparison to the small, everyday, ordinary things. Because one of the other poems that I really enjoyed was a little bit further into the book, because that poem, "For Months I Seemed Ordinary," ends with the lines, "dangling like an unnamed planet." And one of the other ones that I noted that I wanted to ask you about was "like a planet that fell out of its solar system."
Right.
And I really enjoyed that one, and just like the visuals of it, the emotion behind it, and really even almost like the physical sensation attached to the poem. And so, yeah, I just wanted to ask you about that one a little bit more too.
No, thank you so much. That's really a great thing to say. I mean, I love astronomy. I have, you know, a whole book called Stargazing, which was my selected poems over many, many years about the night sky and astronomy and cosmology. I didn't even realize I had that many until I started to put them together. But in a way, I'll look at the second to last stanza, which is, I would say, not exactly a joke, but a little bit lighthearted about mortality. It says, if I am going to turn back into essential elements that comprise the body, I feel I should rest up first. And I think the first part is kind of serious or philosophical, you know, the idea that our molecules could have been in stars or our molecules could be in the future. And then just like that thing where I always feel like if I'm going to do something that's onerous, I better, you know, take a nap or put my feet up. And then there's also, not exactly a pun, but double meaning. it's at the last stanza, it says, "It's almost dawn on my small city block where once I shone as a pilgrim." And of course, the planets are referred to as pilgrims in the Middle Ages because they wander. Nobody knew that they weren't stars. But a pilgrim, of course, is also a person who seeks. And so what does it mean to be a pilgrim in your own neighborhood? And this takes us back to those haiku moments, that quality of seeking someplace that's very known and kind of wandering in something that remains mysterious despite how, you know, quotidian it is, how daily it is.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And we're getting toward the end of time, but I did want to ask if there was a particular poem that you wanted to share before we wrap up.
Okay, I will. I'll share one that was weird and surprising to me. And it's about Tunip Cafe, a little bistro right next to my house. It's called In Conversation. Where the crowded cafe fell away, and it was just the two of us across the table. Brilliant neon-colored globes of solstice hung from the ceiling. The doors swung open, closed. We didn't know anyone. Unwrapping the tamale to find a tiny child carrying a pet rooster with burnished feathers who smiled up at us as if we were real. And that poem is mysterious to me because how is it that I got a tiny child inside a tamale? But I gave a reading and someone I know who's sort of a folklorist said it's like all those magical children like Peach Boy or Thumbelina. It's sort of about the kind of maternal essence of corn and food and nourishment and how those things, they give life. And so it was a surprise to me because I thought I was writing a poem about being with my best friend and having an intimate conversation in a crowded place. And then it took a turn towards the fairy tale and the mythic.
I love that. I love that can happen in poetry as well as longer forms of fiction, where I feel like I'm often surprised by things that happen in my own writing.
Yes.
I do. I love the visuals of that and just creating that moment of expecting one thing and getting something else and the surprise and the emotion that goes along with that. I really enjoy that one. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you for asking. Yeah.
Well, and I want to remind readers that you have a long list of books, but the two that we were talking about today were Borderline and Castaway by Miriam Sagan. And Miriam, where can people find you and stay up to date on your new work and your various other projects? Because you stay really busy.
You can find me, the best way right now is on Facebook, Miriam Sagan. You don't even need to be my friend to see what I'm doing. I'm posting events there, selections from books that are forthcoming, sort of musings, other people's ideas, or send me a friend request. And that is really where that's my home away from home at the moment.
And where can people order or pick up your books?
Great question. Small Press Distribution is also known as SPD, is really the best distributor of independent publishers, and Castaway is available directly through them. The Borderline can be ordered through Joy & Needles. Both of these books can be found on Amazon and presumably, you know, Barnes & Noble, etc. Independent bookstore can order it because Small Press Distribution, that's who they work with. So you've got different options. And buy a book, what can I say? Isn't that what poets are supposed to say? So, and thank you in advance.
Absolutely. Well, I hope people do. I've enjoyed all of the books I've had the opportunity to read from you. They always make me stop and think and take a little bit of time outside of the craziness to just be present and be in the world. And I appreciate having that opportunity.
And thank you. Thank you for supporting literature. And radio is a wonderful medium for that. So I'm grateful to have a chance to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.